My name is Jennifer Anju Grossman. Please call me JAG. I am the CEO of the Atlas Society and am honored to have our founder, David Kelly, here with us today to discuss cardinal values and what they mean in objectivism. So, David, I'll let you take it from here.
Okay, thanks, JAG. I wanted to talk about a very important concept in the objectivist ethics, the idea of cardinal values. And let me just, by way of a bit of background in ethical theory, objectivism is what is known as a teleological ethic. That is, it's based on certain fundamental goals and values. And from those fundamental goals and values, we derive the principles of acting, the virtues and subsidiary values and so forth. And so it's a means end structure in the values, and that's familiar to everybody. I mean, you know, you have a goal, you various means you can choose to achieve the goal. For example, slightly advertising example, if you want to go to the TAS gala, that's your goal. You value it as the best use of your time and money. And then you have the means. You register, pay, make travel arrangements, et cetera. Those are the means. So we have this, this is a pattern that we follow throughout our life at any level and in any action. Ethics is the same, only it defines means and ends at a much higher level of abstraction. And in particular, we draw a distinction between value and virtue. Values are goals, ends, purposes that you pursue, things that you value. And virtues are the principles for acting in such a way as to achieve those values. So most of the objectivist ethics, as Ayn Rand presented it, and as most commentators have presented it, focuses on virtue. there's somewhat less discussion about value, and in particular about cardinal values. Those are, the term cardinal means primary or fundamental. The term is used in Christianity to mean, in, for example, the cardinal sins, the really, really bad ones. In objectivism, the cardinal values are positive things that lie at the foundation of our value structure. The ultimate goal for objectivism is one's own life as a person, one's own life as a human being. But Rand says, and this is from Galt's speech in Atlas Shrugged, to live, man must hold three things as the supreme and ruling values of his life: reason, purpose, self-esteem. Reason as his only tool of knowledge, purpose as his choice of the happiness which that tool must proceed to achieve, self-esteem as his inviolate certainty that his mind is competent to think and his person is worthy of happiness, which means is worthy of living. Now, that's a lot of content in a very short paragraph, and it's the full text of what Ayn Rand has to say about cardinal values. I don't know anywhere else that she elaborated on that idea. I haven't seen any of her commentators, such as Leonard Peikoff or others who have written on the ethics, elaborate on that point. But there's a couple of questions that sort of at least jump out at me, and I think jump out at a lot of people. First of all, what did she mean? What are these values? What does she mean by reason, purpose, and self-esteem as fundamental values? And secondly, why those three? Well, those of us who are knowledgeable about objectivism, the terms are very familiar, but step back a minute and ask why these particular things. Well, some years ago, I was thinking about this, and I came up with for the second question, why these three? I came up with the theory that is presented in a work that Will Thomas and I wrote called The Logical Structure of Objectivism. And Scott has nicely kindly put the URL reference to the book, which is on our website,
That was
into
Jag.
the. That was,
That was
sorry?
Jag.
Okay, Jag. Thank you, Jag. And what I'm going to say today is drawn from those passages. Here's the theory I came up with very briefly. If you think about goal-directed action, which is common to all organisms at any level, but that's a distinguishing characteristic of organic versus non-organic entities. They pursue goals. To maintain their lives, they have to meet their needs, which are goals, which they seek, and they have to exercise whatever capacities of action that they have. So any action, any goal-directed action, and I don't mean purposive in the sense of conscious, I mean goal-directed, I mean like a plant turning toward the sun, involves three dimensions. One is there's got to be a goal. The action has to be for something. There must be some capacity on the organism's part, some means of achieving that goal. And then there's the beneficiary. Whom does the achievement of that goal benefit? Normally, and throughout the organic universe, it's the animal or plant that acts, the organism that acts, is trying to benefit itself to keep its life in place. Well, upon that to human beings. Human beings, unlike other lower forms of organic life, do not pursue a set number of values deliberately by automatically by hardwired. We have free will, we have reason, we have the capacity to choose. So that's why we need ethics in the first place. And but we're still talking about goal-directed action. For human beings, therefore, what are the means that we have? Our basic means, our cardinal means for acting. It's the capacity of reason. What goals do we pursue? Well, life fundamentally. But to pursue life, we must be act in a deliberately purposive way. So purpose, maintaining purpose, is an important cardinal value. And finally, the beneficiary of our actions should be the self. Ayn Rand says self-esteem. Will Thomas and I have a slight disagreement on that point, and so we think of the third cardinal value as simply self, and I'll explain the difference in a moment. So that's why these three means, goal, and beneficiary, reason, purpose, self. So let me say, go up, move on to the what I think is a primary question. What do these terms mean? What does it mean to have reason as a value, to hold purpose as a value? Let's start with reason. So many people have wondered why rationality is described as a virtue and reason is described as a value, cardinal value. Why? What's the difference between reason as a value and rationality as a virtue? Well, fundamentally, reason as a value means valuing one's mind, valuing one's rational capacity. It's not just the exercise of reason in particular actions, which is rationality. And it's not limited. The rationality, on the other hand, is a broader concept than reason, or reason as a value, because rationality is our means of achieving any value, whatever, in any domain. But our capacity for reason is a special value. And valuing the mind means a couple of things. I'm just going to give you a few of the points that you'll find in that chapter on cardinal values. It means, first of all, commitment to understanding reality and accepting it even when you don't like it. That has many dimensions, but for example, being objective means not faking reality through wishful thinking or emotional bias or, worst of all, lies. You know, Rand's argument about rationality is that when you lied to others, you were making up a false reality for them. You might get away with it for a while, but you're counting on their stupidity. When you lie to yourself, you are corrupting your most important tool for living. The mind is an incredibly complex and delicate instrument. When you fake reality, it's like throwing sand into your gas tank. Your engine's going to eventually will slow down and stop performing. Objectivity is one dimension of one aspect of a goal of valuing reason. Another, the second important one in my view, is that of integration. Integrating your knowledge, keeping it consistent, always expanding it, being interested over time in the acquisition of skills and knowledge. So valuing your mind is something that is implicit in any action, in every action properly. Your mind is the tool for any and every action. But over time, your mind is something to develop, grow, and protect from putting sand into your gas tank. By contrast, just to give you a stark opposition, think of Alzheimer's, terrible disease of old age. It's worse than blindness. Alzheimer's is mental blindness. It's the loss of memories, of knowledge, and worst of all, of the ability to think clearly, the loss of one's mind. It's not just the loss of a sense organ like blindness, which is bad enough. It is a terrible fate. And the fact that it is a terrible fate is a way of illustrating how important your mind is as your most important possession, your most important value. Okay, let me move on to purpose as a cardinal value. Again, there are some paradoxes that Will and I talk about in holding purpose as a cardinal value. But here's what it means. First of all, it means the commitment to act for our values in reality, achieving our goals, rather than letting an intention remain in the mind as an unrealized wish. A what if? Oh, I could have, should have, but I didn't. Dagny Taggart in Atlas Shrugged on the first run of the Jean Galt line has a reflection as she looks at the engines that are driving this incredible vehicle. Her reflection is, and it's a quote from the book, first the thought, then the purposeful motion down the straight line of a single track to a chosen goal. Wasn't it evil to wish without moving? The intention without the action, or to move without aim, to act without purpose, which is another point. The purpose as a cardinal value means the constant, ongoing commitment to acting on purpose, to having a purpose, to knowing what you're doing. It also means appreciating that your values, all of them, from the highest value, your own life, down to today's value of taking out the trash. Those values exist in a hierarchy of importance, hierarchy of fundamentality and importance to your life. So having purpose as a value means purposive, means being purposive in the sense of a sense of priorities. You know why you're doing the things you're doing now and why that's more important than the things you might have been doing otherwise. All the other actions that you've foregone by doing this action. And finally, it means valuing achievement and the creation of value, production, discovery, invention, improvement, getting things done, making a difference in the world, making the world in the image of your values. That's part of purpose. And the concept of purpose, the value of purpose as you hold it in your mind, is that that's a constant kind of drive or awareness or goal that you have at any moment. So it's the pursuit of purpose is, Ayn Rand describes it as the choice of the happiness which reason must proceed to achieve. And in that sense, being purposive is the core element that gives meaning to a life. And that need for meaning is so, I think, unmistakably a part of human psychology. And Rand's point here is, I think, and I would totally agree, that meaning comes from the purposes you've chosen, not from anything outside, not from God's will for you or society's plan for you or anything else, or the integrity of the environment that's outside you. All those may, not God or society, but you know, the things we might do for our environment, but we don't sacrifice for that purpose. And speaking of sacrifice, that brings us to the final of the cardinal values, self. Rand described the self-esteem as the inviolate certainty that his mind is competent to think and his person is worthy of happiness, which means is worthy of living. That's part of what I quoted earlier. Now, here's where Will and I have a slight departure from Rand's concept. And the reason is that self-worth is a moral appraisal of oneself. It's based on the character one has acquired. I'm worthy of life because I have lived a good life so far. And my ambition is to continue leading a good and even better life, morally as well as practically. So, but we don't start with the character, we develop a character. Why should we seek to acquire it? There's got to be a more fun, that one reason that led Will and me to think that there must be a more fundamental commitment to oneself as a beneficiary of action than self-esteem, which is a hugely important, but there are more fundamental layers to considering oneself as a beneficiary. And there are also, what about aspects of ourselves besides competence, the competence to live and the worthiness to live, besides competence and character? Every one of us as individuals has many, many characteristics that give us each a unique identity, including temperament, personality, interests, cognitive style. I mean, the list goes on. There are many, many dimensions of something as complex as a human being. And those aspects of our identity, that's part of what it means to consider oneself a beneficiary. I want to live for me, all of me. You should live for you, all of you, and not simply your character or any specific competence. So, this is why I think that self is a more fundamental commitment to oneself. It explains the need for self-esteem as a specific spiritual value, and it motivates us to achieve it and maintain it through virtues such as rationality and pride. To put it a different way, it's a commitment to oneself as a beneficiary of all the actions one takes in pursuing one's life. If the root of the cardinal value of purpose is an esteem for and commitment to my life as an ultimate end, the root of the cardinal value of self is an esteem and commitment to my life, to myself as the ultimate beneficiary of my actions. So that what that means is valuing one's identity, recognizing and being aware and appreciating oneself, even in those respects that may not have moral significance, whether you have a good sense of humor. Well, if you do, that's an asset to be valued. If you don't, well, you probably have other assets. You can enjoy humor or whatever. That's a trivial example, but it is an example. Self is a value, and this certainly applies to self-esteem, is a commitment to happiness, your own happiness, and making it possible. One of the critics, some of the critics of egoism, the broad view of oneself as a beneficiary, say, well, that's like telling people to roll off a log. Well, no, it isn't. Being committed to your happiness is hard, and many people give up and just settle for less than happy life. It comes from choosing consistently to value yourself. So, by way of summary, I think these cardinal values are fundamental because they tap what for humans are the essential means of acting, reason, the essential goal of acting, one's own life, by holding purpose as a value, and a beneficiary, the self. So with that, I want to let me stop here. That was a lot to go over and a lot to digest. I know it's and again, I would recommend anyone who wants to follow up or learn some of these things to take a look at the logical structure of objectivism. So let's turn to questions.
Thanks, David.
Comments.
All right. Well, we would love to get any of you up on stage if you want to ask David a question about cardinal values or any other questions about philosophy. So please just raise your hand and do that. And also wanted to remind you to please share the room so we can give others an opportunity to have this discussion with our founder, David Kelly. David, one question is how does benevolence fit into the cardinal value scheme that you're discussing?
Well, I consider benevolence a virtue, not a value per se. It's a pattern. It's a way of acting. The value that benevolence aims for is productive win-win a value exchange with other people. And value, I mean by value exchange at all levels, commercial, personal, romantic, it's the idea of the trader principle. It's a form of acting by the trader principle, and that's a principle of justice. But we don't get to the point of having a trade unless we begin by treating people with benevolence, which means looking for opportunities, being open to opportunities with people. That means, and that requires in turn treating people a certain way. So I would say it's a virtue. Not a benevolence per se, it's not a value, technically speaking in ethics, but it's a virtue that aims at certain values.
Got it, that's helpful. Lawrence. And I am seeing that telltale absence of a mute button, which you know the drill. You're going to have to sign out and sign back in. Tom.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Great. Thank you. Hi, David. My question is on the cardinal value of purpose. And if I remember the structure, the logical virtue that comes out of that is productivity. And so one of the conundrum I'm seeing is, perhaps you mentioned this earlier about the paradox of it, but is there a principle that will incorporate the cardinal value of purpose to productiveness. And if so, how is that formulated? I know that it's going to have to be some kind of a teleological hypothetical statement, but is purpose then the antecedent, to express the value, and then the action is something else. So that's a little bit of a conundrum for me.
excuse me. Okay. Purpose means being purposive, that it at, which includes knowing what you're doing, having a purpose, knowing what it is, why it's important to you, and that is a constant. A constant. It's like this is, and I'm going to offer an analogy, which is some people would consider explaining the obscure by the even more obscure. But it's like the axiom of existence. One way of keeping your mind on track is understanding that there's a reality there. It is what it is. It's not affected by your views. Or your wishes or fears. It is what it is. And that is true of every act of cognition you make, from the most simplest sensation to the most advanced scientific theory or philosophical theory. And it's a guiding principle. Well, purpose is analogous in the sense that it's a guiding value, and it's implicit in all of our actions. We always have some purpose, but what makes human beings different from other animals is that we need to be conscious, hold purpose consciously as a value, because we do have the capacity to evade, to daydream, drift, have wishes that we never act on, like Dagny said. So that's one point about the nature of purpose. How does it relate to productivity? Well, Ayn Rand did think that productivity was the key virtue that embodies or is a virtue because of it allows us to achieve our purposes. And she was thinking of productivity in the sense of, I think, a career, work, considered broadly to mean any kind of sustained linear activity that leads you from one step to the other. This is an issue that objectivists debated a lot. My own view is that productivity, if you literally mean making things or providing services or working, then that is only one purpose. It may be a central purpose, that's what Ayn Rand says, but we have many other purposes in life, and throughout all of those areas of action, we should be purposive, knowing what we're doing and why. So I would say it might be better to think of the virtue as being responsible, having integrity, acting as to achieve your goals in consistency with your own values and abilities, exercising. I mean, purpose means exercising your capacity to action, guided by your knowledge of what you want to achieve and guided by your virtues and technical knowledge about how best to achieve it. So I'm not sure, Tom, tell me if I'm getting anywhere near to an answer to your question.
Yeah, well, I see what you're broadening the scope of productiveness to be about being responsible, and I do remember your lecture on choosing life, that that's the ultimate choice is well, choosing life and then acting on that and being responsible for that. So I see the connection there. So I'm guessing that what you're denigrate or demoting is the idea of productiveness as a virtue that can be tied directly to purpose. Rather, you're saying that purpose as a cardinal value is almost like a background in the subconscious, constantly there, as in the axioms for valuing, pursuing values and so on. So it's not that directly connected to productiveness. Is that, am I getting right?
Yes, even if, yes, that's exactly right. I think even if you broaden the concept of productiveness to include, for example, raising children, which Ayn Rand, you know, acknowledged, you still have, you know, the times when your kids are grown, there are times when you retire from work and do whatever, you should still be purposive, but you may have produced enough that you don't need, at least in terms monetary terms or work-related terms, you're done. So it can't be productiveness if what you mean literally is kind of pursuing a career. It may well be the most important of the goals, most important of our purposes, but being purposive will apply to someone who's retired, just managing his own money, having fun with his grown kids, her grown kids, whatever. I mean, it's just going on canoe trips. purpose applies to everything you do.
All right, Lawrence, okay. You had a question.
Yes, thank you for this. Thank you for this, David. I'm still sort of working through it all in my own mind, but a question that I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on is, when you talk about the cardinal values and that initial premise of it all starts from man has free will, and you sort of move down that chart, including, you know, value of self and whatnot. I guess, how do we approach individuals who, for whatever reason, have become perhaps like unable to achieve their purpose or values and have become more emotional, or perhaps have come to their own, at least in their own belief, reason that it's not worth going on, because other philosophers or thinkers, like I know Locke says that it comes to a point where you could choose reason to end your life, but it feels like that would run counter to objectivist principles. So how would we approach individuals in that state to sort of reorient them back to these values?
Well, the answer to that question is largely psychological, but let me just say about that possibility. Tom referred earlier to an essay I wrote called Choosing Life, and that was about life as an ultimate value, and specifically choosing it, what that means, the sense of the search for a meaning in life, and the sense of life is worth living. And, you know, there's another aspect of the fact that the mind is unbelievably complex. We have emotions as well as cognition. We have temperaments. We react to things. We feelings can be, they're hugely important, but they can also interfere with, the key example here is depression. If someone is depressed, that may well be, I think in psychology that it would be considered true. Depression is not just a bad mood where you're having to be feeling down or tired at a given point in time, but when it's the loss of goals. And people who've written about depression often say, there's nothing that can motivate me anymore. I've given up. I have no capacity. I don't care. And in the extreme case where that is so pervasive and long doing, that's one of the chief causes of suicide. So that is a tragic situation, a tragic condition to be in. There's been a lot of work in psychology about how to get to people, how to help with depression now, including medications as well as therapy. But because the mind is so complicated, there's a lot that can go wrong. And not all of it is deliberate or the result of our, you know, of evasion or bad thinking. A lot of it is, yes, but not all. And so in that case, what the cardinal virtues would subscribe is use your mind for the purpose of getting out of this state. It's like a psychological emergency, you know, in the ethics of emergency, Rand says, when you're in an emergency, the primary goal, the ultimate goal is get out of the emergency, return to normality. Depression, giving up are not normal. However common they are, they're not wired into us independently of choice. And when they happen from whatever wired in things happen, we can still use our minds to think, figure out a way to get out of it and, you know, tap the minds of those who can help. So that's the best I can do as not as a, not a therapist, but that's what I would say, having done a lot of reading and thinking about this phenomenon. So I'll just leave it there. Thanks, Lawrence.
All right. I was hoping that Melanie might join us up here because she has her PhD in geriatric social work. So I know that she's thought a lot about aging and maintaining one's cognitive functions as we grow older, and also, of course, the terrible plague of dementia. So, Melanie, do you want to unmute yourself and ask David a question? It's kind of hard. You just have to. There, you did it. Oops, you're back off now. You did it. Whoops. Okay, we hear you. Go ahead, Mom. Full disclosure, she's my mom, too. Melanie? You want to go ahead and ask your question? You can just speak. All right, well, as we're figuring that out, I can actually, Scott is muted, but I can still hear him thinking. So, Scott, go ahead.
I think. Thank you. David, good talk. I remember a line in Atlas Shrugged. I think Hank and Francisco were saying, you know, what is the most depraved person, one without a purpose? And yes. I think that in some ways, I'm curious what you think about societal purpose or civilizational purpose. Like, I think that, you know, we used to, whether it was survival or growing the country or the Cold War, that we had more of like a national purpose, and kind of as that's gone away, that, you know, social justice or environmentalism is almost kind of filled in the void.
That's an interesting question. Yeah, and I think there's an answer that comes from the political philosophy that follows from this very individualist ethical philosophy. And that is, the government has a specific job to do, a specific role. So if we're talking just about the government, which means the one public institution that everyone in a country is part of and shares and is ultimately responsible to, you know, following the law. If that's what you mean by national purpose, the way I would put it is our national purpose should be to be a nation of private purposes. The whole function of government is to allow individuals to interact by choice without coercion, but otherwise have other than banning coercion and protecting, i.e. protecting rights. That's it. Now, there are lots of other things, lots of specifics that come up under that. In wartime, obviously, the protection of individual rights means a large military budget and a large military effort that, but it's a winning the war can involve a lot more than on the part of the government than a lot of spending, a lot of producing, a lot of fighting that are not part of normal times or peaceful times. Now, but that's about the government. If you mean society, I think society, what I would like to see is a society that's based on respect for reason and for individuals, for individualism, for individual happiness, individual pursuit of goals in a peaceful win-win voluntary arrangement with that allows everyone to live as best they can choose to do and allows those with the most capacity to produce in art, science, business, to do so and create the values that all of us enjoy as they filter down to us. So I'm, you know, I mentioned going to the gala, and what are my means? Well, one is to make travel reservations. What kind of travel? By plane. I didn't invent the plane, someone did. And I'm now the better, I hope they made a lot of money doing that. But right now, I'm the beneficiary, and so for a couple $100, I can be transported at a speed and degree of safety that were impossible even 100 years ago, let alone 500. So I guess my general point is the national purpose, if what you mean is the government's purpose, should be protection of rights. Social purpose is to have a society that respects and honors talent and ability and effort at any level and is not riven by envy, malice, or other such I'm going to call them sins because they really are.
Thank you.
Okay. If Melanie, I'd love to hear from you.
You might want to sign back out and sign back in because that's also something that happens because I'm not seeing your mute button now. So give that a try. And otherwise, we're really honored to have Richard Salzman, Professor Salzman, Professor of Political Economy at Duke, and a senior scholar at the Atlas Society.
Thank you, Jennifer, and thank you, David. This is very good, very helpful. When I hear Cardinal, I hear something like really, really, really important. And these are the really important values. And so, and that suggests a hierarchy. So, why only these three? Is there a fourth, like on the horizon, that might have made the list? So that's one question. But the other one is, these three have always struck me as lining up with three of the virtues, namely rationality, productiveness, and pride. Is that just me seeing shadows that don't exist, or was that her intention? Because if, you know, what does it say about the other virtues that, you know, did not find a corollary is not the right word, but did not find a reflection in the values, you know? I'll stop there. I could say more, but I hope that's enough to make it understandable to you.
Yes. In the Objective Ethics, Rand says in that paragraph, it covers the same, it's very short, it's essentially the same as the one I quoted from Galt's speech. But she goes on to say, the three values which together are the cardinal values are the three values which together are the means and the realization of one's ultimate value, one's own life. And that's an interesting point that I could elaborate on. But to answer your question, with their three corresponding virtues, rationality, productiveness, and pride. So, but she goes on to mention four other virtues besides those three. And they are honesty, integrity, justice, and independence.
Yeah.
And in a way, you could say those are aspects of rationality applied to different aspects of reason, particularly in a social context, or the ways in which reason can be compromised, and you need these virtues to avoid falling into certain traps like hypocrisy or lying. Honesty says don't fake reality. Rationality says grasp reality.
Yeah.
So, however, as I've thought about it, and I don't think this is a departure from Rand. I think these virtues are just ways of carving the basic goal, carving up the different things, aspects of life, of a rational, productive, rational, purposive life that benefits yourself.
Yeah.
And so, but rationality, as I was saying, you should be rational in whatever you're doing, whether you're advancing your mind, that is using rationality to seek to enhance the value of your own rational capacity, as in learning a new subject or skill, but also use rationality in producing, and you use rationality in pursuing your self-esteem. So rationality is always a virtue in any realm. That's one of the reasons why reason is such an important value, because it's the source of your ability to act, in support of your life across every domain of action. And similarly, productiveness, this goes back to an issue that I was, discussing about this. The productiveness is, it's often treated as it's somewhat narrower than being purposive in general, because if productiveness means work, producing value in the world for exchange, then that's hugely important, and it may be the most important of the purposes you can pursue in life. But saying it's the most important doesn't mean it's the only. So I think the scope of productivity, as we normally understand it, is a little narrower than being purposive.
Yeah, I like also the parallels of means, goal, and beneficiary. The beneficiary part, self-esteem or pride, when it's as a virtue of pride, it's always been interesting to me, because it's taken a long time for me to get out of the mindset that it's just a cause. You do all these other things, you'll be proud of yourself. But yeah. if it's a virtue, it's got to be much more active than that, right? It's not the residue of all that happens when you carry out the other six virtues. So I think at one point she called it moral ambitiousness. Yes. And if that's true, it's an active virtue. But, David, it's sometimes conveyed as passive, right? Same thing with self-esteem. If you say, is that the cause or the effect? Well, unless we have self-esteem, we're not likely even to get out of bed in the morning, say. On the other hand, it's true that when we exercise the virtues, we feel and achieve the values, we feel better about ourselves. So, any thoughts on that? It's not really a question, I guess, but whether you've thought of it.
One of the things that, Will and I developed in the Logical Structure book, and this is in the chapter on virtues as opposed to values, but our analysis of pride it has it. It's kind of Janus-faced in a way. It has a backward-looking aspect of taking credit for what you've accomplished, taking credit for the good things you've done.
Right.
We've probably all known people who have been highly successful, achieved a great deal, but feel lousy because they don't appreciate it. They don't stop to smell the coffee they brewed, so to speak, to mix metaphors.
Yeah.
But it also has forward-looking, and that's the moral ambition. Keep doing the good stuff because you want to maintain your character, and that's how you do it. It's a very Aristotelian point. You acquire virtues by practicing them, by acting on them. And because to an extent, a virtue is psychologically is a habit or a tendency, not a blind habit as some people have attributed to Aristotle or other thinkers have held, but a conscious habit, but still a habit that is there when you need it.
Very helpful. Thank you, David. Very helpful. Sure. Thanks.
Melanie?
Yes, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Go ahead. Well, he lost you again. We're getting close, though. We'll practice this every clubhouse, and we'll get it right. But if you just keep trying to chime in, and we'll try to get to you. Roger, you need to unmute as well.
Roger. He may not be able to. I think he's leaving and coming back.
Okay.
Melanie, was that you?
All right. Well, we still have a few minutes left. I'm going to ask for last calls, last questions. If anybody in the room, I think I see a familiar face. I'm going to invite him up.
I have a follow-up if you care to use my question.
All right. Go ahead.
Thank you. It has to do with the idea that reason, purpose, and self are spiritual values. Now, in one of the diagrams that you have in the LSO, diagram 3.1, you say that it is a spiritual category. It's in the category of spiritual value. And then there are two orders of justification. There's the logical as well as the justificatory order of the political contributing to the social contributing to the spiritual to the material, and which ultimately goes to the ultimate value. My question is, shouldn't it be the spiritual value first? Connecting to the ultimate value, or at least on the same order as material value? That's my question.
Okay, yes, that's good. And I appreciate the fact that you've obviously studied the Logical Structure book. What this diagram is, I haven't looked at this in a long time, but this is the order of derivation. Or rather the order of support. We start, and the arrows are a little confusing in a way. One's ultimate value is one's life. That's the foundation of everything else. To pursue life, the first thing in order you have to do is achieve material values, food, shelter, health, mobility, production. These are things that we obviously need as living beings. And this is where we are closest to the animal sphere, in that all animals, at least higher animals, need to provide food, shelter, maintain their health as best they can, and their mobility as best they can. How do you do that? Well, because reason is the means by which you achieve material values in particular, and reduce all production, then we need to value reason. And that takes us to spiritual value, including reason, of course, but purpose, self-esteem, and some of the more specific, less abstract values, such as education, a career, recreation, and so forth. And because of that, there are certain social values. So the one way of obtaining material or spiritual values is by trading with others, engaging in economic exchange, but also personal value, personal relationships, friendship, family, communicating with other people, learning from other people. Humans are the only species we know that can pass along acquired knowledge to the next generation. And last in order are the political values that are required if we are to be able to live as individuals pursuing material, spiritual, or social values. In that respect, if you're looking at the diagram, the arrows are a little puzzling, and I'd have to think about why we did it that way, because it's really a hierarchy of a derivation. And as a hierarchy of derivation, the arrows should be pointing downward, not upward. I'm talking about something I'm looking at, and Tom, you've seen, maybe looking at too, but not in front of us. If we had if I could do a screenshot of my computer, I could show you. But the point is, why do we need reason? It's not an intrinsic value. There are no intrinsic values. Reason is a means to what? A means to one's life. Why? Because we have to produce in order to live. So if you want to produce, you've got to exercise reason. And if you want to exercise reason consistently, you must value reason and purpose and self. So that's the order. Now, the philosophical order of derivation. This is the neat thing about the objectivist ethics. It's not just, doesn't just say, okay, live your life and flourish. What does flourishing mean? Well, a lot of the people who talk about flourishing, including Aristotelians and a lot of objectivists too, tend to take for granted what the ingredients of flourishing are. This is what the logical structure book tries to show, is there's actually a way of deriving the elements of flourishing, of a good life.
Great. Well, thank you for that. Wanted to just touch on a few events for next week. We've got tomorrow here on Clubhouse at 5:30 p.m. Eastern, Ayn Rand versus Nietzsche with Professor Jason Hill. Monday night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern, we've got the Atlas Society September Book Club. Richard Salzman will be hosting on Gold and Liberty. Tuesday, The Objectivist Theory of Family with Rob Trzynski here on Clubhouse at 7 p.m. Eastern. And Wednesday, we've got the Atlas Society Asks Robert Zurbin. And then Thursday, Richard Salzman will be back with a student event for Morals and Markets. So lots going on next week. And we've got our gala in Malibu, October 6th, panels with the scholars during the day. Jag, go ahead.
Yep, exactly 2 weeks away to the day. So I'm looking forward to seeing all of my colleagues, as well as some of our supporters who will be in the audience. So if you're in the Southern California area or up for a hop on a plane, then please join us. It's going to be a great event.
Great. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Jag, Scott, Lawrence, Richard, everyone, and Melanie. Sorry, we didn't get to you this time. I'll look forward to
online. Your opportunity. Yes, and she'll be at the gala, so you'll see her there.
Wonderful. Good.
Okay. Thank you.